Matt, thanks very much for letting me come too. My husband is the vice principal at Malian College, and so he has lectured Phil, and he loves you very much. Speaks very highly of you. He loves you. My office is actually in Malian College, where Peter works as well. Peter's on the bottom floor, and I'm on the third floor, just a little bit closer to heaven, I think. But it's in the campus where Philip McCallum oversees the campus, and so I work. I see Philip around, and he's a huge help to me as well, because there's times when I run events on the campus, and Philip's strong and steady hand is sometimes needed for me. So thanks, Philip. So I feel amongst friends, and I feel warmly welcomed, and I feel like I'm with people that my husband loves as well, even though he couldn't be here tonight. He's speaking at Ashgrove Baptist tonight. We normally stay together, but we couldn't. We're going to talk about abortion. What should Christians think about abortion? Now, first of all, I just wanted to say thank you to you as a church, and particularly to Phil, who invited me, for allowing me to come and speak about something that is just so incredibly important and very relevant right at the moment in Queensland. Because by looking at the big questions as you are recognising that Christianity provides a unified answer for the whole of life. And so there is no question, there is no issue, there is no subject that should be taboo for a Christian to speak about. It's not that we always personally know the answers. Sometimes we have to say, I have no answer for that. But there should be no question that is taboo for us to actually then go back to the scriptures and find the answer. Because if we truly believe that God created us, he has a purpose for our lives, then we have to believe too that he has an answer for every situation. And so thank you for addressing a topic that is a really tough topic to talk about. And the reason why it's a tough topic to talk about is because there is an ideal, and it's God's way, and sometimes by endorsing and speaking about what God's way is, we can appear to be judgmental. And I want to talk about that a little bit later on. But I wanted to start by just talking about what God's way is for babies to be born. So God's plan for babies to be born is that a man and a woman would come together in marriage and that they would have children. So God designed man and woman to be biologically complementary, and he designed them to fall in love. He designed them to find one person for the rest of their lives, to marry that person, and then he said, be fruitful and multiply. And so the very plan of God is for one woman, one man, no sex outside of marriage, come together, marry, have sex, and if God wills, have children from that joint sex. So there should be, in a perfect world, no reason for abortion, because God's plan would not actually allow that. But we all know that life is stuffed for many people. Life is really hard. At the outset, I'll tell you, I have not had an abortion. Neither have any of my children or my family, but I have good friends who have, and my children certainly have friends who have, but I have not. And the reason why I want to say that is because the fact that I have not could make me seem, again, judgmental. And I want to say to you from the outset tonight that by the grace of God, I would be standing up here and having had at least one abortion or other abortions. Not one of us could say that we would never, ever do such and such. We would never, ever murder, even, for instance. Because Jesus made that very hard, didn't he, when he said, if you hate somebody, then you've already committed murder in your heart. And so standing up here and saying that I have not had an abortion makes me not be able to say to somebody I know exactly how you feel. I have had a miscarriage, and so I understand the pain of losing a child from the womb, but I don't understand that unique pain of having an abortion. But no one is able to stand in judgment on anybody else on any sin. We are not the ones who can actually decide what sin is going to be particularly heinous or particularly unforgivable, because there is no unforgivable sin. And there is no sin that you or I would not have committed there but by the grace of God. I had godly parents. I married young to a godly man, been married for 37 years. We have 3 married children and we have 10 grandchildren. And so I have a life that has been blessed with children. And I've had a life that has been blessed with a godly parents and then a godly man. Most people don't have that. There, but by the grace of God, I think go I and go any one of us. And so for that reason, our response to anybody who tells us that they have had an abortion should be immediately compassion. As in any response to anybody who has been caught up in any way of going against what God's best for them. Perhaps particularly in the area of abortion, because it touches a woman's life so incredibly deeply. And not just a woman, but the guy who's involved, the grandparents. I have had grandparents come to me and weep because their only possible grandchild that they ever expected to have was aborted. I've had them weep in my arms. And so it is a particularly sad thing to go through. But our response should always be compassion and love. There should be no judgment coming from the church in the area of abortion. And I think that unfortunately it has appeared as if there has been judgment on a number of different important social issues. And I don't think it's always even been completely true or accurate. But the words that we've used or the behaviour that we've had or sometimes the responses that we've given has given people an impression that we are judgmental on these issues. And I think that right from the start, we have to actually reject that. It's hard to imagine the kind of justice that would have to exist for there really to be a world where abortion is unthinkable. But this is the world that God created. And this is the world that God actually intends for us to have as a second heaven. It's a world where all humankind is valued just because they're human. It's a world where people take responsibility, men and women, they take responsibility. It's a world of peace. And not just a pretend peace, not just a decision to lay down arms for a short period of time, but the peace that only Jesus can bring. It's a world where there are other ways of solving problems than killing each other. This is a world that is hard to imagine, but this is the sort of justice that God actually demands, and this is the justice that is actually impossible for us to reach without Him. One of the injustices, I believe, in abortion comes with the whole mantra of her body, her choice. Because when we say her body, her choice, then we are actually removing ourselves from any of the blame. So it's her body, her choice, her fault. So if it's her body, her choice, she can make up her own mind, we are actually saying, this has got nothing to do with us, this is your body, it's your choice, and whatever the results are, whatever you decide, then you're the one who has to actually deal with that, because it's your choice. And no woman becomes pregnant on her own, and there should be no way that she should ever go through an abortion on her own. I know that many women don't. Many women have people who will help them, but ultimately, nobody wants to take responsibility for taking the life of another little baby and they put it onto the woman. I've seen it so many times. It's your body, it's your choice. But when we say that, we are saying it's your fault. For that reason, and for many other reasons, I would propose to you that abortion is profoundly anti-woman. It is encouraging a woman to believe that she is. So we talk in a day and age when we talk about women and women's rights and women being able to do anything. It is encouraging a woman to believe she is tough enough to kill her own child, yet not tough enough to raise it. And is that really standing up for a woman's rights? Isn't this actually just another way of putting a woman's needs last? And when all is said and done, we believe that she alone has responsibility for whether her child lives or dies. Is also profoundly anti-woman because around the world, by far and away, the most babies that are aborted are girls. So we have a situation where women are having babies, and because they're having a girl, they abort. Now they're a woman themselves, and so can you see the irony in a choice such as that? And it does not happen to a large amount in Australia, but it does happen. but certainly in other countries it is rife. And so we have a situation where a woman is choosing to abort a baby because it's a girl, her own kind. I can't accept that that would come except from pressure. And not just pressure from a husband or a partner, but pressure from society, pressure from other family, pressure from education, pressure for all sorts of reasons. At the moment, this is just a very recent article in the news, and they're talking, it's a women's group, and a woman's group is actually fighting against the law that prohibits sex-selective abortions because women are feeling so pressured to have a boy that they want that law lifted. So women are fighting for the right to be able to have less women in the world. Over the past 14 years, there are 24 million girls missing in the world simply because of sex selection abortion. 24 million women are missing in the world. And so there are ratios up there of what the natural ratio is. It's 105 to 100, so there are always going to be slightly more men being born in the world. So around the world, the birth rate is 105 to 100, but it skews incredibly around the world in different countries because of sex-selective abortion. And so I want to propose to you why women feel like we need abortion, and particularly in Australia, where we are so blessed. I mean, we really are amazingly blessed in our country. And we can say all sorts of things that are wrong with our country, and I know that there's lots of things we could fix. But we are in an incredibly, incredibly privileged position living here in Australia. We just have to think of our brothers and sisters in Mosul at the moment to know, you know, to be sitting here tonight and be able to sit freely. But we're very rich. So if you have a fridge with food in it, if you have water on tap, if you have an extra set of clothes in your cupboard, then you're already in the top 70% of rich people in the world. And so we're very blessed here in Australia. And yet even here, we fight for the right to kill our children. And we kill our children at an incredibly high rate. So around the world, women are not treated equally in many, many countries. In many countries, a girl can be flogged because she stood too close to a boy. A woman can be killed because she's pregnant having been raped and she's the one who's blamed. Women are not treated equally around the world, and it is to our shame. And there are many groups and many Christian groups who work on behalf of women, and it's a wonderful thing. We see it in so many different places. But certainly sex trafficking, all this sort of stuff is much more focused on women than men. Not to say that trafficking doesn't affect men, because there's terrible trafficking going on, particularly in Thailand at the moment, where men, young boys are being put on fishing boats, never to be seen again. When they become useless to the fishermen, they simply throw them overboard. And this is happening. So trafficking is a terrible, terrible thing, but women are particularly vulnerable. And around the world, women are not treated equally. And so we should fight for our women to be treated equally. And then so equally, and because they're different. Then in our country, what the radical feminists, and I have many good friends who are radical feminists, but what they believe is that we are equal and we are the same. So around the world, women are treated unequally because they're different. Here in Australia, we want equality because we're the same. But I believe that what God says is that we are equal, but we are different. And so can I just touch on that for a little bit, because I think it's really important when it comes to the area of abortion. So Philip and I work at the same campus. He's a man and I'm a woman. And he has a lot of control over the campus. He's well respected on the campus. What he says goes. If I went out and told somebody to move their car, they would laugh at me. If Philip went out and told them to move their car, they would move it. So he has power that I don't have at the campus. Now, there is absolutely no question in either my mind or Philip's mind that we are equal. There is no question for me that my husband and I are equal. But our functions are different. Certainly on the campus, Phyllis and my functions are very different. In the home, my function with my husband is very different and always has been. I've always known that he's the head of our home, he's the father. There are certain responsibilities that come with being a father and certain responsibilities with being a mother. But to be a radical feminist or to be somebody who believes that we are equal and the same, and this goes to a whole lot of arguments, this certainly goes to our education, it certainly plays into the marriage argument at the moment. This whole equal and the same is really important. Because to be equal and the same, a woman has to be able to be unpregnant. Because women don't believe that they are different than any man. They believe that they can be and do everything that a man can do and be. And it's not what God says. Because God created women for a certain function. One of those functions is that he created them to be to have a womb and to be able to reproduce and bear children. So if you are a feminist that believes, or if you are anybody in Australia who believes what I would say is a lie, that we are equal and the same, and I don't believe that equal means the same. You just have to look at the recent Olympics and the Paralympics. Don't anybody tell me that the Olympian and the Paralympian are not equal, but they were different. We had different rules, different fields. So in Australia, when we say equal means the same, it has to be that where I'm pregnant. So I'm somebody who is going for a job in the UN. And so is Kevin Rudd. Don't know why I thought of him. So Kevin Rudd and I are going for the same job in the UN. We have the same qualifications. We have the same education. We have the same abilities. And we are the last two. So there's been a long list and they've actually gotten it down to the last two. And all of a sudden we find out that there is one more interview that we have to actually attend, and it's in Brussels. And it's next month. But I'm actually 7.5 months pregnant. So to be equal to Kevin in this opportunity, I have to have the opportunity to be unpregnant. I have to have the ability to have an abortion. So instead of following my God-given difference of bearing a child, if I truly want to be equal and the same with Kevin, if I want to have the same opportunity for advancement, I have to be able to be unpregnant. Now, it might sound really harsh to you, but I really get that argument. I understand it. I understand why women feel as if they want to be equal to men. And a lot of it actually goes back to the very beginning with Adam and Eve. And boy, have I got a word or two to say to Eve when I get to heaven. Goes back to the whole curse of women wanting to be equal to men, wanting to overtake men. Men, the struggle for power. The struggle for power. And so I understand women not wanting to be in a position where they cannot be treated equally because they are carrying a baby. And so if we do not have the facility of having an abortion, if we do not have the ability to actually go and be rid of the baby within our womb, then we cannot be equal and the same. And so I think it's really important as Christians that we get that in our mind so clearly, that God intended us to be equal and be treated equally. And I think that's really important, that men and women in the church are seen as equal before God, but we have different functions. And our functions are so beautifully played out when we actually play out our role as God intended. And I'd love to talk to the women about how that means to be a wife, and the men how it means to be a husband. For children, how it means to be children. We are equal in the sight of God, and yet there are different functions. So let me just tell you a few of the statistics for Australia. There's approximately 80,000 surgical abortions each year. That figure doesn't include the use of RU486 or medical chemical pills that you take. About a third of all Australian women will have an abortion. So this represents 1 in 4 pregnancies in Australia. This is very, very high. And we have an ageing population, and we sometimes wonder why. About 96% of all abortions are performed for psychosocial reasons. So that's because the woman, for some reason, cannot cope. It's not a medical reason. There is not a medical reason. There's nothing wrong with the baby. But there is some reason why the woman feels that she cannot continue with the pregnancy. The psychosocial reasons include half of late-term abortions, which is after 20 weeks gestation. Less than 3% of the abortions that are performed in Australia are performed because of disability. And when we talk about disability, one of the ones that comes up all of the time is Down syndrome. Over 90% of babies who show positive tests for Down syndrome are aborted in Australia. Now, this is shocking if you put your mind to that. This is shocking. Because just about all children who have Down syndrome, if you ask them if they love their life, they love their life. They love their life. And yet we choose to abort them. It's not just Down syndrome children that we choose to abort. In Queensland last year, 27 late-term aborted babies were actually born alive. Those are just the ones that were born alive, and that's in Queensland. Over the past decade in Queensland, there have been over 200 babies who have been aborted and have born alive after the abortion. They're left to die because the only successful abortion is a dead baby. There are some reasons why this happens, and I'd love to expound on that if you're concerned about that, but this is the cold hard facts. And so we have midwives who are actually putting tiny little babies who are still crying in sterile dishes in broom cupboards to remove the crying from the room because it's too distressing. And I'll talk to these midwives. Tell me what the difference is when a baby is born at 24 weeks and cared for so lovingly in a humidity crib and kept alive, and the difference then if a baby is not wanted at 24 weeks. In the same hospital, virtually down the same corridor, we can have children who are being cared for at 24 weeks because their parents want them, and we can have children being discarded. It's a very hard thing to grasp. Victoria has abortion laws that are far worse than ours, and yet our state government at the moment is looking at laws that will change all of that. Can I just briefly touch on what's happening in Victoria? In 2010, there were 366 terminations after 20 weeks. In 2011, 378. Of those 740 late-term abortions in 2 years, 374 of them were for psychosocial indications. So this is the woman just not being able to cope. If she had just had somebody to stand beside her and say, "I will be there for you." We talked about a world without injustice. And I mentioned that we talked about a world with responsibility. And if there was somebody who would be prepared to stand with this woman and be responsible with her. In 2010, 184 of these psychosocial late-term abortions were carried out between 20 and 27 weeks, 7 between 28 and 31 weeks. In 2011, 172 were carried out between 20 and 27 weeks, 10 between 28 and 31 weeks, and one after 37 weeks. These laws, in anyone's terms, are diabolical. So, ACL and a number of other pro-life groups got together and we did a Galaxy report. We did a whole poll, and I've got the poll results here and I'll leave it with Philip. I can get more of these if anybody particularly wants. But up on the screen, there's a number of the results that came out of it, and it was really very interesting. Most people, far and away, most people opposed late-term abortions. But our government is not listening, and so we need to let them know what we're thinking. By far and away, most people believed that abortion does harm a woman's health. And research and statistics would show this is very, very real. There's a lot of different statistics up there. 66% believe that an unborn person at 20 weeks has rights. So if an unborn person at 20 weeks has rights, then they certainly have the right to life. So I work in the area of politics. I work with politicians. I speak to them. I have a very open door in the Queensland Parliament, which I am very grateful to. God has given us great blessing there. So in our democratic society, it is through politics that we develop laws that either restrict or permit widespread abortion, that also protect or weaken our freedoms, harm or empower the poor, endanger or care for our most vulnerable. Politics is simply too important to ignore. Our politics is where we can have a say on our environment. Our politics is where we can have a say on religious freedom. Our politics is where we can have a say on public housing. All of these things, health, education, that William Carey went to India and changed the entire society because, as a Christian, he believed that God intended for us not just to have redemption of souls, but redemption of culture. And so it's through politics that we actually can redeem culture. Although laws are not the only means of protecting human life, they do play a very important and sometimes decisive role in influencing patterns of thought and behaviour. So, for instance, our laws around smoking have changed our culture. We can change culture. We can change culture around all sorts of things, and I'm working hard to change our culture around porn, working hard to change our culture around the terrible foster care system that we have at the moment and the thought of children who go into different homes and not thinking about longevity for them. There is a culture that we need to change, and it's through politics that we actually can really change. Laws do change behaviour. I drove down here and I stuck to the road speed because I've actually had too many tickets. I have had tickets in the past, and so that makes me think I've got to be really careful. If there were no road laws, then we would just do what we liked. No matter what people said, you really should slow down. Unless there really was a penalty, unless there was a law, I think we would actually be just left to our own devices. So laws can change culture. And so the laws that are being looked at the moment about abortion in our state are very, very important because they not only change what you can and can't do, but they change culture. They change what we think about life and death issues. They will change us into a culture of death rather than a culture of life. And so we have some politicians in our parliament at the moment who are strongly advocating for life. Two of them are there. Fiona Simpson and Mark Robinson are standing there. We had a rally outside Parliament House. But there are many others. And not just on the LNP side of politics, there are many throughout each party. And the Catterboys are also very strong on this as well. And so there are good people in there. But there's also people who are strongly in favour of abortion, and people like our Minister for Children and Women, Shannon Fentiman, who is a really lovely lady, okay, a lovely lady. But she believes abortion should be available to birth for any reason. And the reason why is because she believes that equal means the same. And I understand that. I understand, without an understanding of what God, how God created us, how we as women could be caught into that understanding of we have to be able to be the same. So at the moment we have a second bill up. We had a first bill and the committee looked at that bill and they recommended that it fail, but it still has not been voted on. So it's still sitting on the table in Parliament. Before it was voted on, Rob Pine brought a second bill to our Parliament. And the second bill is diabolical as well. Both of them are very bad. And so in the first bill, we had a very large petition. I actually thought it was the largest petition for a while, but I ended up finding out that daylight saving beat us. So people think more strongly about daylight saving than they do about life, but that's okay. There's a second petition that you can sign. But that first petition was very influential. And when I wanted to present it to Parliament, I rang Shannon Fentiman's office and I said, could I bring the anti-abortion petition in to present to Shannon? And they know me well and they said, Wendy, you know Shannon's position on abortion. I said, I know, that's why I want to come and bring it to Shannon. And they said, sure, no, she's fine with that, that's okay. So I went in and had an opportunity just to be Jesus to Shannon, be kind, be loving, present to her this very, very large petition. We've got a second petition on the way at the moment, but can I also say that there was submissions called for. So with the first bill, 1,430 submissions were put in. This is extraordinary. So if you have an inquiry into something that's happening on the Great Barrier Reef, you might get about 80 submissions. That's probably pretty normal. 1,430. Of those, over 82% were opposed to the abortion, the change in abortion laws. And so this was very significant. And so that sort of thing makes a big, big impact into politicians' minds. And so with this current submission, their current inquiry, the submissions have been called for, they've closed now, but there's over 1,040 have come in for this current one. And we've started going through, so a friend of mine and me went through those 1,430 to get to that 82%. So I know that that's true because I went through them all. And so we're working our way through this next lot, and at the moment over 70% of these submissions are also saying no to the bill. This is very significant because after the last one, all of the pro-choice groups realised that they needed to get people to put submissions in, and so they worked really hard and got as many in as they could. And so this is a very significant and very exciting thing that's happening. On Thursday this week, I've been called to speak as a witness to the inquiry, and so I will be presenting before the committee about the second bill. And I'm really praying that God will overrule, because I do not believe that our state will be the same if we adopt laws that bring in a culture of death. When I was young, I believed that what Satan was really attacking, and I think the church used to talk about it quite a lot, that Satan was really attacking people's marriages, and particularly Christian marriages, and perhaps even particularly pastors' marriages. And we used to talk about it quite a lot, how strong we needed to stand up for marriage. If I had to say what Satan was really attacking at the moment, there would be two things. I would say he's attacking life and he's attacking our children. He hates our children and he hates life, because God is a God of life. And so tonight, I hope I've explained a little to you why I think we have abortion. I hope I've explained to you what I believe that God says about abortion. I want to finish on just one extra verse. But I also hope that I've perhaps encouraged you to participate in these questions when they come up in Parliament. And you can still sign the petition. The petition is open until February. We've left it open that long because the committee is not due to report back on the second bill until February. My hope and my prayer is that by February, if they don't do anything like change the rule, so they can always change things in Parliament, but if they don't change anything, the normal process now will be that the committee will report back on the second bill in February. I think it's the 17th of February. Then, because it's a private member's bill, it sits for 3 months before it's voted on. So that takes us February, March, April, May. That takes us to the middle of next year. It would be very unlikely that we don't have an election in the second half of next year. It has to be had by very early 2018. So it would be very unlikely that they leave it that long. It would be most likely in the second half of next year. I don't believe that either of the major parties want to go into an election with this on the table. And so I'm really hoping and praying that God will have given us grace and time, and this will be pushed into the next election period. But even then, we know that there are people who are actively promoting this coming through. And so please sign the petition and share it. Our tone really matters, but also the truth matters. If you really love, then you tell the truth. If you really love, you tell the truth in love. And so I believe that both of those things are just so important on just about every issue that we can look at and see, wow, that's a really difficult thing in our day. Truth and love. In the Bible it says, I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses. And do you know, when I read this, I can almost imagine God just choose life, urging us. I set before you life and death. Please choose life so that you and your children may live. And so, what do Christians think about abortion? What should we be thinking about abortion? We should be always choosing life. But as we deal with people day to day who are facing whether or not they might have an abortion or whether they already have had an abortion, then grace, mercy, compassion is the only response that we can have, because this is a really very, very sad thing to have done for a woman. It's very sad. of the bond between a woman and her baby immediately is very strong. And so it's the pressure that comes for a woman to abort is actually, it's diabolical. And so God says to us, I've set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Now choose life. Choose life so that you and your children may live. So that's all from me, Phil. I don't know whether people have got any questions. I'm very happy to ask them now, answer them now or even any time. You know where my office is. Philip can show you the way.
Yes. there are a few questions here, actually. Mm-hmm. There's more than a few, so I'm not going to be able to ask them all within there, but I've got a few here. But
even if you emailed me them, I would email you back what I think, and you could let people know.
So I'm just going to have a couple more sent to me, so I just want to read these. Well,
yep.
Read these in my head and just pick a few. Alrighty. Let me ask you over here. Was this helpful? Has this been helpful? Great. It's been fantastic. And I'll throw a few questions over to you. And thank you for the people who have sent the questions in. And unfortunately, I can only answer three of the questions here tonight. But feel free, if you want to come and see Wendy after this, then you're more than welcome. I'm sure you'll stay
Absolutely.
Around and chat for a little bit, especially while we're doing the NCLS with the other people. But I'll be able to answer three, and then please feel free, come and gather in the back corner or something if you want to ask questions and go from there. But one question I'd love to ask you first is, would maybe us not opening up abortions, would that increase a child abandonment more? And I'll further on just ask that, if not abortion, what are the alternatives?
So this is a really important question because we can't be the ones to say we don't believe in euthanasia without providing palliative care. We don't believe in abortion without providing weight. There are many people who are advocating at the moment for safe baby boxes, and I agree with that as well. So when a woman feels completely at her end, that she can actually use a safe baby box, it would be in a hospital. But that's very extreme. One of the really big issues, and this is where it becomes complex, because Shannon Fentiman, who believes in abortion to birth for any reason, is working really hard to fix our foster system, and she's doing a really good job. And so I'm working with her on that, and I'm saying to her how important it is that our rules for adopting have to change. So at the moment, for a young girl to have an abortion, she does not even have to tell her parents. So she can go to school in the morning, she can have an abortion during the day, she can come home and either catch the bus or be picked up from school, and her parents don't know why she is withdrawn. Her parents don't know why she's actually crying in her bedroom. Her parents don't know why she is not talking to them, why she's angry. That same girl in Queensland can't have a tattoo or get body piercing, but she can have an abortion during the day without knowing. If that same girl decided that she wanted to actually adopt her baby, she has to go to at least three psychologists, she has to have the baby, and she has to keep the baby for a period of time, no less than 3 weeks, before she can adopt that baby. So this is a girl who has decided that she doesn't actually feel like she can continue having this baby. She wants to give life to that baby, and yet we make it so incredibly hard for her to actually give life and give that baby to another family who would care for that baby. So Shannon understands that and sees the problem and is working hard to fix our adoption system. But at the moment, it is much more socially acceptable to do away with your baby than to give away your baby, although one is actually giving life. And so there's a long road to go with this. I do not believe for a minute that stopping abortion would actually increase abandonment. But because we have to actually change culture. So when we started, we had that God's plan is for a man and a woman to come together, get married, in that commitment, that committed relationship, to have children. And so we have to get back to an understanding of the responsibility, what the children are. But a woman does not lightly choose to have an abortion. A woman does not lightly choose to go in. No woman grows up thinking, oh, I'd like to have three children and two abortions. But abortion is almost like a suicide. It's almost like I have no other hope for this baby. There is no other choice. So we have to actually be in the business of providing choices.
Thank you. And just to correct me if I'm wrong, a baby box is a place where, say, it's a hole in the wall where you can pull the box out and place your baby in there if you don't feel like you can look after
exactly.
it.
Exactly. So it's like
push
a community
the box where nobody knows who was the one that gave it.
No.
But that baby then will be cared for.
Absolutely.
By either a hospital group, and then they will then take the baby to be cared for by somebody else.
Yes. And there's many countries around the world that are actually doing this.
Thank you. I'll jump over into another one, and this one I'll just ask it. It's often thought that an abortion is a quick, emotionless fix. Can you indicate what percentage of people regret this decision much later?
It's hard to say because a lot of women keep the fact that they've even had an abortion quiet. So a lot of women have an abortion when they're very young. They get married. Their husband might not even be aware. And it's something that they don't want to actually revisit. So the only real knowledge that we know are the women who are brave enough to come out and speak. But one of the research documents that has been done fairly recently is talking about the huge increase in mental illness in women. And they're trying to work out whether there is a correlation between the rise in abortion and mental illness. I think intuitively I would have to say it's fairly obvious that there would be. But the women who come to know God, who speak to me about their abortions, are the ones that I know of, Philip, of the ones who say how regretful they are. They don't go through a day without thinking. But the women who have come to know God also have this amazing freedom from guilt. But I think it's very strong for many women. There is women are asked whether they regret their abortion. There are very few women who would ever say that they wanted to have an abortion. Most women say that they wish that they didn't have to have. And most women would indicate that they would have had the baby if they felt that they had the support.
Thank you. And last, one final question that I'd like to ask through the people that have sent messages in, and that is, how can we best influence our society within this arena?
So,
how can we, as individuals?
Certainly numbers make a big difference when it comes to politics. So the petition and putting in submissions, that really does make a difference. But I think the thing too is to not feel as if you can't offer your help to somebody. Don't be one of these people that says, her body, her choice. If you have a friend who is considering having an abortion, speak to that person. Tell that person that you will be there for them. Be the support that they need. But if you don't feel that you can even do that, there are places in Brisbane like Priceless House that you can actually take women to, that they will be given all options. Now, God is a God of options. God is a God of choices. He doesn't make people obey his way. And this might shock some people, but if you go to Priceless House, which is an amazingly Christian place, Graham Preston's wife runs Priceless House. Graham Preston is the man who was arrested for standing outside abortion clinics and praying. So this is a very strongly Christian place. But they will not say to you, you cannot have an abortion, but they will give all of the options and they will say, this is what this is and this is what we will do for you if you choose to have this baby. And so I would say one of the ways we can affect culture is to actually be there for our friends, be there for our spouses. If you're a man, be there for your wife. Don't ever say to... Like the first thing that should come out of anybody's mouth when you hear someone is pregnant should be congratulations. Not, did you want this baby? Not, is this a surprise? Not, how do you feel about that? The negative vibe that comes to a woman when that is said to her is just not acceptable. The first word that comes out of your mouth when you find out that anybody is pregnant is congratulations, because life, new life, is always a welcome thing.
Thank you very much. I'll pass you on to this. And one of the things that I was quite touched by within my look through even talking about adoption was that in Australia themselves, there's At this stage, there are 80 people, 80 couples who have been cleared to be open for adoption of a child, are there waiting to adopt a child. And over the last year, out of those 80 people, five of those couples were able to adopt a child. So there are people there wanting to adopt children. So it's not like this child's going to go nowhere if they choose to, if a person or a lady chooses to continue to carry this child and then put the child up for adoption. There are loving couples who have been cleared, waiting and wanting to be able to love a child as well. And that's one thing I think we sometimes forget, is there are people out there wanting to be able to love a child like they are their own personal child.
That's true.
So that's a good thing to share. Thank you. And let me pray. Wendy, is there one thing that we could be praying particularly for you as well?
Well, particularly for Thursday, I'm really hoping that, because when I go on Thursday, and as in other times, I'm given 5 minutes to actually present, and then I have about 40 minutes of questions, and they just fire questions at me. So in those 5 minutes, I try very hard to be godly without being... coming from a, you know, Christian perspective. I would never go in and tell them what the Bible says. But I do want to be Jesus. I want to be wise as serpents and harmless doves. I want to be winsome so that they will... these are ordinary people like you and I. MPs, it's surprising, they're just ordinary people. And so if you could pray for Thursday that I will be wise, that I will be winsome, and that I will have answers for them. Yeah.
Thank you. Let me pray for that, and let's just close this time in prayer, and I'll invite the worship team to come forward as we come to our last part of our service.